I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we'll break down a major win in our press pass case against the state of Washington. Plus, Seattle Socialist Mayor just cannot stop blaming other people for her failures. And the unhinged backlash against a local brewery for making a political donation. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. As you know, we announced late yesterday a major victory in our press pass lawsuit against the state of Washington. This stems back from the 2026 legislative session when myself, Ari Hoffman, and Jonathan Cho were all denied by specifically the State House of Representatives press passes. First time in 20 years in journalism and news that I've been denied a press pass. And so we filed suit not only against the state of Washington and the House, which is controlled by Democrats, as well as the chief clerk of the House, but also against an entity called the Capitol Correspondents Association. So the Capitol Correspondents Association is a group of mainstream journalists that for years has dictated who gets press passes and who doesn't. So we, over the last few weeks, have entered the discovery phase of that lawsuit process. And that basically means that they're requesting emails and texts and things from us, and we're doing the same from them. We get some of the discovery back from the Capitol Correspondents Association. It did not paint them in a very good light. They immediately asked us to settle the lawsuit and made some pretty big concessions. We've agreed to that settlement. Here are some of the concessions that they have made. First and foremost, the CCA shall not oppose any applications by any of the plaintiffs, so me, Jonathan, or Ari Hoffman, for press credentials, granting access to the House chamber when the legislature is in session, and the CCA shall no longer even make recommendations to the House regarding press pass applications generally. So those are the two big ones. So the CCA is saying, okay, we're out. We're not even going to be part of the press pass application process anymore. We won't come out against Ari and Brandi and Jonathan getting press passes from the House of Representatives. And then also as part of the settlement, they agreed to send the following letter to Bernard Dean, who's the chief clerk of the House of Representatives. I'm going to read it for you in full. So this letter will be sent and transmitted to the chief clerk by Jerry Cornfield. He's a reporter with the Washington State Standard. He's also the president of the Capitol Correspondents Association. So it reads as follows. I am writing to formally inform you that the Capitol Correspondents Association will no longer make recommendations to the House regarding press pass applications effective immediately. This means that should Brandi Cruz, Ari Hoffman, and or Jonathan Cho apply for press credentials granting access to the House chamber in a future session, the association will not oppose their requests. Looking ahead to the 2027 session, please let me know if the House decides to revise the credentialing process. If there are changes, I will help spread the word to members of the press with an interest. Regarding Cruz, Cho, and Hoffman, who challenged the current system, the association has not taken the public position or pronounced that they are not practicing journalists. So that ends the Capitol Correspondents Association's involvement in this lawsuit. Now, the lawsuit is not over, as our attorney, Jackson Maynard, with the Citizen Action Defense Fund, said this morning at a press conference outside the U.S. Court of Appeals in Seattle. The lawsuit continues.
This case is not over. Today's announcement does not end the lawsuit. The settlement resolves our claims against the CCA, but the case continues against the Washington State House of Representatives, the chief clerk, Bernard Dean, and the legislature.
But one of the things that this settlement with the CCA does is it puts the House of Representatives, specifically the Democratic caucus that controls these rules, out there on their own. They have to own these decisions they're making about press access. They can no longer blame or push blame on the Capitol Correspondents Association saying, well, we use their recommendations. Now they're standing on their own. And I think for our case moving forward, that strengthens it quite a bit. I talked about that this morning.
For 50 years, the Capitol Correspondents Association has acted as the gatekeeper for media access in Olympia. With the settlement we're announcing today, that comes to an end. But to be clear, today is not a win for press freedom. Not yet. Because now the gatekeepers are the government. More specifically, a single political party that now controls who gets a press pass and who doesn't. Today, it is critical that the entire press corps come together to realize one indisputable fact, that allowing the government to decide who is media and who is not is a dangerous thing. It is fundamentally un-American. It is an assault on freedom of the press. It forces reporters and journalists to weigh whether their coverage could cost them the access they need to do their jobs.
It's also a huge waste of money. You know, we did our press conference in front of the Court of Appeals because that's probably where this case is going to end up. And then ultimately, I would imagine the United States Supreme Court. It could take 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. The state of Washington is going to spend millions of dollars to try to block three independent reporters from being able to come down to Olympia a couple times a year. Good use of taxpayer money? I don't think so. But again, you know, this puts the House of Representatives sort of on the spot. And for sure, our lawsuit against them is continuing. I would know because tomorrow I'm being deposed by the government. Yes, I have to be deposed by a lawyer for the government to explain to them and answer questions about whether I should qualify for a press pass or not. So that will be, I'm sure, an excruciating experience. Now, lest you think I'm going to allow the Capitol Correspondents Association off the hook so quickly and the mainstream journalists that make up that organization, I am not, because I think that we need to call them out for some of what we discovered through this process. So as I said, in the month of August, we started to get discovery in, and that included emails amongst members of the Capitol Correspondents Association. Both Ari and Jonathan alluded to some of what was found during that process. Here's Ari Hoffman this morning.
And now we know that this wasn't a formal, objective system with clearly defined rules. The CCA had no public definitions for many of the standards it claimed to apply. Its members were still helping the government decide who qualified as a journalist, even though it didn't maintain a membership list or keep meeting minutes. These were reporters from legacy news organizations helping the government decide which competing journalists were allowed through the door. I noticed none of them bothered to show up today.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. I knew that would be the case. You know, how many of these news outlets covered it in big headlines when we were denied press passes? And then when a federal judge rejected our emergency injunction, oh, they were thrilled. Every news organization in the state covered it. Not one legacy news outlet showed up at our press conference this morning. Not one. Maybe it's because they knew we were there to criticize in part them, or it's because the narrative no longer suits them. They wanted to cover it when their side was winning, and now they don't want to cover it when their side is losing. Now, I will say, I'm going to show you for the first time, now that this settlement has been reached, the emails that were provided to us by the Capitol Correspondents Association in discovery are public, are going to be made public, at least right now. And I'm going to show you some of what was happening behind the scenes with reporters at the Seattle Times and the Washington State Standard, working with the government to try to keep us out. But first, I want to say that the person who was most targeted, I think, in sort of a vicious way, by these reporters was Jonathan Cho. He talked about that today.
I'm disappointed in what I learned through this discovery process, and I will call them out by name. Jerry Kornfield with the Washington Standard, Shauna Sowersby with the Seattle Times, were the two primary gatekeepers at the Capitol Correspondents Association. And what I saw was a personal assault on our press access. They looked into my personal W-2s. They talked about how much money I made at the various outlets that I currently now report for in this city. What does that have to do with getting a press pass? Bottom line, instead of going out of their way to get us in to Olympia, to hold our elected officials accountable, they went out of their way to keep us out.
Now, what does it mean, went out of their way? So in order to understand all of this, we have to go back a year and a half. So during the 2025 legislative session, I was told that I would not be given a press pass by the Capitol Correspondents Association, the first time that that had ever happened to me. And so at the time, I got an attorney and they sent a cease and desist. And rather than face the specter of legal action, the Capitol Correspondents Association just said, okay, we won't be involved in the press pass process anymore. Now it's going to be up to the House and Senate to do what they want to do. That was what they said publicly in 2025. And then 2026 rolls around. And behind the scenes, it turned out that the Capitol Correspondents Association had not gotten out of the process at all. They were just doing it secretly. They were helping the House determine who was going to be allowed in and who wasn't. And they were even attempting, as they knew that we were getting ready to file a formal lawsuit that named them, they were trying to dig up personal dirt on me and Ari and Jonathan Cho to try to what? To try to do what? Justify the decisions that they were making. So as Jonathan alluded to, there's this email. Again, this is the first time that this is being shown publicly. It was part of discovery. It was sent from Jerry Kornfield, a reporter with the Washington State Standard, to Shauna Sowersby, a reporter with the Seattle Times. And in it, Jerry Kornfield is laying out what he thinks is dirt on us that makes us not fit for a press pass. He says, here is a link where two of them team up to stake out daycares. As if that's unjournalistic, staking out daycares. He says, finally, I've attached some random PDC and IRS data. On PDC, I don't see any money from Let's Go Washington or Riker to me. But all those 2024 events were likely Lincoln Day dinners. And he spoke and she could have endorsed him. Not sure if it will trigger anything. So they're looking into PDC. They see payments I charged for giving keynote speeches. But they don't see payments, you know, from Let's Go Washington or Dave Reichert. So they're trying to get to the bottom of whether people are paying me to take these positions that I take. And then he apparently attached IRS stuff. The IRS stuff is just for awareness of the conservative circle. Gordon whines about the press shutout and the law firm he funds sues. So in here, they were digging into IRS data on a man named Steve Gordon, who isn't suing them. He's complaining about the press pass shutout. So they're trying to dig into IRS data on a guy who owned a massive trucking company and who funds a lot of conservative interests, and who, yes, I happen to consider a personal friend. But he has nothing to do with their decision to deny people press passes, so they're just going out trying to dig up dirt on private citizens. And then Jerry Kornfield says, Cho is one rich guy in flip-flops. He did a lot of political work in 2024. None yet in 2026, but I think his prior work further solidifies a no. Cho has a lot of video work. He even managed a campaign in 2024, but nothing since he formed an LLC. Search his name and you will see he gets $163,000 from Discovery Institute, which is his salary for being a journalist covering homelessness for Discovery Institute. It's public record because Discovery Institute, in the way that it has to file its tax forms. So making $163,000 a year, in Jerry Kornfield's estimation, makes Cho one rich guy in flip-flops. So taking a dig at the fact that Cho often wears flip-flops. And then he goes more into Steve Gordon, etc., talking about investments and certain foundations and all of this. So behind the scenes, they're trying to dig into our personal finances, which they wouldn't be able to dig into mine because mine aren't public. They're trying to look around and just see if they can find anything that will justify what they've been doing. And also behind the scenes, December 1st, 2025, when they've said publicly that they were no longer involved in the credentialing process. The House was going to take it over. Well, here's what Jerry Kornfield sent a woman named Melissa Palmer with the Washington State House of Representatives. He said the Capitol Correspondents Association recommends credentials for the individuals listed below. There had been a lot of back and forth between this Melissa Palmer, government employee, and Jerry Kornfield, where Jerry's clearly helping them, you know, figure out how they're going to take the press credentialing process over, who's going to be allowed and who isn't. It culminates on December 1st when he gives a list of who the Capitol Correspondents Association believes is approved media. There's some very interesting names on that list. Three of them that he is telling the House should get a hard pass, which means you can come and go as you please. It's better than a day pass. You're basically just credentialed and you can walk around free will. He recommends that three members of the Washington Newspaper Publishers Association get hard passes as journalists, as members of the press. These are people who work for essentially a lobbying group. They lobby for the interests of newspapers across the state. Now, the Capitol Correspondents Association says, because I take advocacy positions, that I can't be a member of the press. Yet, is there any other lobby in the state of Washington that they would award hard press passes to? No, but they give them to three members of the Washington Newspapers Association, a direct contradiction to their own stated internal policies that they used to deny me press credentials. And one more on there I just want to note. A Murrow Fellow for a hard pass. Remember those government-funded, state-funded media positions that your tax dollars are paying for? Yeah, they get press passes. So if, as long as you're state-funded media, government media, you can get a press pass. Lobbyists can't, but as long as you're a lobbyist for the newspapers, come on in. We'll give you a hard pass. And I think this all stacked up to being a very strong case against the CCA, which is why they came crawling to us for a settlement. And then you see there's some other things here. Jerry Kornfield back and forth with Bernard Dean, the chief clerk of the House of Representatives. He said, "Happy Friday. This is on January 16th. As you know, our Correspondents Association has opposed providing credentials to those in the business of media and communications who are also active in politics. I want to flag this upcoming event on the grounds of the state capitol as an example of an activity that we would cite, if asked, for why we would not support a day pass or a hard pass for Ms. Cruz should she request one." So that was a Let's Go Washington rally that I participated in that was very public. But keep in mind, Jerry Kornfield's not supposed to have a role at this point in January of 2026 in press credentialing at all. They said publicly, we're not helping at all. Yet he's proactively telling the House of Representatives, controlled by Democrats, "I just wanted to flag this as an example of an activity that we would cite if you ask us as to why we would not give Ms. Cruz a hard pass." And then, of course, there's this other email, Bernard Dean, the chief clerk. He sent Jerry Kornfield a list of tweets that I sent out where I say I don't use the title journalist, which I've said a million times publicly on this show. So you have the chief clerk, Bernard Dean, who's sending to Jerry Kornfield, "Oh, here's evidence that Brandy shouldn't get a press pass." And it's just a list of like X links, to which I've said, and it's just like semantics at this point, I've said I'm not a journalist because I think there's a better title for me in the media sphere. Reporter and political commentator is more appropriate. But what I do is very obviously journalism. We break stories on this show all the time. What I'm doing right now as I speak is journalism. So yeah, I do reporting, I do journalism, I do commentary, I do investigative work. So I do journalism. It's just not the title I prefer because I give my opinion. And I just want to make that very clear, but they think that's somehow evidence against me. So it's just fascinating. Now the Capitol Correspondents Association off the hook in the lawsuit. If they were to, like they clearly were doing in 2026, try to influence Democrats behind the scenes moving forward, they would be in violation of the settlement agreement that we now have with the Capitol Correspondents Association. So this now moves forward. As I said, I'm getting deposed by the government tomorrow. Wish me luck. Maybe I'll have a drink tonight, not before I get deposed, but a drink tonight in preparation for it. But the House of Representatives can fix this very easily. And this is, just for the record, this is a much bigger issue than me and Jonathan and Ari. And this is an issue that's coming to a head nationwide. The media landscape is changing. The old orthodoxies about who's press and who isn't, they just don't fit anymore. Down in Olympia, during some of these press conferences, there might be two or three reporters around the table for a press conference with the governor or with legislative leaders. New media is rising. New media accounts for so much of how Americans get their news and information. So these outdated policies have to be updated, because this is about me getting the access I need for you, for people who rely on this show for news and information about state government. And so when you cut me out, you're cutting out a whole section of Washingtonians. We need the same access that the Seattle Times gets for its readership. The proximity to people in power and to be able to ask them questions. And I think if the House presses forward, it'll ultimately end up before the United States Supreme Court and set precedent around the country, because there are other state legislatures dealing with this issue now. And some of them are red states that want to keep out independent reporters on the left. And then there's other blue states trying to keep out independent reporters on the right. So the government cannot be in the business of dictating who's a member of the media and who's not. And so the best thing for the House of Representatives to do is to just say, look, we don't want to pay for any more costly lawsuits with taxpayer funds when we're in a budget crisis. All they have to do, it's super simple, adopt the same press credentialing guidelines the state Senate adopted in 2026. It's fascinating because you have these two chambers of the House, and they dealt with this in totally different ways. The state Senate, which is technically led by the Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck, who's a big 1A guy. I give him a lot of credit for that. They basically set a rule that says, if you say you're a member of the press, you just fill out a form, you get a day pass, you can come down and cover the legislature, and all you have to do is abide by some rules of decorum. Like, don't act a fool. Don't interrupt other people's ability to be able to do their jobs, and you're fine. And so that is very inclusive. They had no issues with it in 2026. So we're not asking the House to reinvent the wheel. The House should just adopt what Senate Democrats have done, get over themselves, and not be afraid of a few hostile questions once in a while. And look, I've said I was at the socialist Seattle mayor's office for a press conference a couple weeks ago. I was one of the least hostile people in the room. The other reporters were at her throat. And I just had a sort of reasonable question. So just because I disagree with them doesn't mean I'm going to what? Get in there and shout at them and yell at them? It's absurd. So big announcement in the press freedom case. And we will move forward from here. But I think a lot is going to come out about these mainstream journalists trying to help the government keep out critical press. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe you want to leave the state, for instance, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com is working with a lot of people who are doing the same thing. The key is to get in as early as possible and sort of set the stage for your planning. You know, Wes is working with people, for instance, who are worried that the millionaire's tax will become an income tax on everyone.
Many people believe, as you do, as do I, that it is going to be an income tax for everyone. And believe it or not, the vast majority of the people that I work with, they're actually not going to be impacted by the millionaire's tax. But what they are impacted in is just the cost of living that we are in. And they could be people who are my generation with families. They could be people who are getting ready to retire. And they just see the writing on the wall that it is very, very expensive to live here. They see where the future is headed, and they are making the decision to eject now because this is not going to be the place for them to raise their family or the place for them to retire affordably.
Yeah. And so the best thing you can do, even if you're just thinking about it, is reach out to Wes, especially in this market where there's a ton of listings on the market. Ask him what his plan is. Okay, what can you do for me to make sure I can get my home sold, get the price I want, make sure it doesn't sit on the market forever? And Wes will devise a plan. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to a double dose of Unbelievable. All right, I'm almost sick of talking about how Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson failed in her response to the mass shooting at the Bite of Seattle, the gang shooting. Because this should have been like a one-day story, not the shooting itself. Obviously, it's a bigger issue than that. But all the coverage since then has really centered around how the city of Seattle didn't brief the public for like 5 hours, what happened, who dropped the ball, etc. And had the socialist mayor come out just immediately and said, look, I take responsibility for this. I'm the mayor. There was a lapse. We should have briefed the public sooner. We could have moved on. But she's just been playing this blame game ever since. So you'll recall, it goes back to this clip where the media is waiting hours and hours and hours. They get nothing. And a member of the Seattle Police Department's public affairs office has this exchange with reporters.
We are almost 5 hours. I'm not mad at you. I am mad at the dignitaries that are holding up a press conference for the public to get information about a mass shooting outside of the space. It is outrageous
what I'm being told
to wait for dignitaries.
So what I'll do is I'll go back here and we'll get everybody down. We'll get somebody to talk to you guys. I mean, I do understand, like I said, I do understand you guys have been out for a while. I've been out here for a long time.
It's not us, it's the public that needs to know.
And we want to get the information to everybody, so, okay? All right.
So we have a timeline on when these supposed dignitaries are supposed to be here?
If what I'll do is let's just get who's here, let's get them down here.
That's
you guys. And then what we'll do is as those dignitaries come, then we'll have them come.
Yeah. But we need the police first, please.
Who are these so-called dignitaries?
They'll be here in a minute.
Yeah, so he blamed his dignitaries. We are waiting on dignitaries to arrive. And everybody's like, which ones? Who? Why? Can't you just brief us? So it's been this whole back and forth, you know, about which dignitaries they were waiting on and why didn't the police at least give the press some initial information. So Katie Wilson and the new interim chief, Andre Sales, did a sit down interview with Como News, and she took a little responsibility, but still blamed dignitaries.
In that period, at the very end of the evening, from about 9:45 to 10:45, when we finally learned that a press conference was imminent, I rushed down to Seattle Center, and there was a short delay while we were waiting for the governor and for Congresswoman Jayapal to arrive. And so that totally owned that, right? But again, I think there's been this conflation between that hour and the whole rest of the night.
Can't lose the fact that 5 hours go by and the public does not know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Public doesn't get a Seattle alert either. So they don't know if they're safe. They don't know if somebody's still at large. That information could have been communicated, and you agree it should have been.
Absolutely, right. And that is exactly what the updates that that we've been working on are designed to address.
Okay, sorry. Can you play it again? Because I just want to hone in on something she says at the very beginning there, because that's new to me.
In that period, at the very end of the evening, from about 9:45 to 10:45, when we finally learned that a press conference was imminent, I rushed down to Seattle Center, and there
okay,
was
right
a short
there, right
delay.
Okay, right there. Can you stop it? What? That's brand new to me. So you're saying you weren't at Seattle Center? Why weren't you at Seattle Center? And also, 9:45, when we learned a press conference was imminent, aren't you the one who's calling the shots? Aren't you the one who's calling the press conference? What do you mean we learned a press conference was imminent? And then again, she blames dignitaries. Now look, I would love to blame Bob Ferguson. You know me. I will take any opportunity to blame Bob Ferguson for anything that I can. But this is not Bob or Aunt Pramila. You don't think that I'd blame Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal if I could? They were there. They were waiting for the mayor to get her you-know-what together and to decide what was going to happen. And for any delay that involved waiting for them, it was minuscule. The delay we're all angry about is the 4 or 5 hours beforehand. And so just to reiterate, so we have the old statement from Governor Ferguson about this, and then there's a new statement in response to what Katie just said from Congressman Jayapal, which I'll read momentarily. So this is from Governor Ferguson's office. The governor received word about the shooting at approximately 7 p.m. He immediately drove to Seattle. He was at a location within 10 minutes of Seattle Center by 9 p.m. At approximately 10:10 p.m., the governor received word there would be media availability at Seattle Center. He immediately proceeded there and arrived at Seattle Center at approximately 10:30. So the only delay from the governor is 20 minutes. 20 minutes of 5.5 hours. It's not the governor's fault. It's also not, as much as it pains me, it's not Congressman Jayapal's fault either. Here's what she said in response to what Katie Wilson said in that Como interview. At 10:10 p.m. on Sunday night, my staff was notified by the mayor's staff that a press conference would occur that night instead at the Seattle Center. I proceeded to the Seattle Center immediately, arriving at approximately 10:40 p.m. On the way to the Seattle Center, I spoke to the mayor, who informed me they would begin the press conference as soon as we were there. Any delay in waiting for either the governor or I to arrive was a matter of minutes, not hours, As I have said previously, I do not know what led to the hours-long delay. So her story is the same as Bob. 10:10 p.m. They say, hey, we're going to do a press conference. Apparently, that was also news to the mayor of Seattle, who said, when we found out we were going to do a press conference and it was imminent. Yeah, and then they got from where they were down to the Bight of Seattle, although I would argue all of them should have just been there. They should have just gone there on the ground. But it's clearly incompetence from a mayor who's hardly ever had a job in her life. And yes, the police department should have been given, and I'm not saying they didn't want to, maybe they were getting just conflicting directives from above. There should have been a briefing of the press, even if it's just minuscule information. Here's what we know so far, or here's what we don't know, every 30 minutes. And I've been to a million scenes of mass casualty events. They do regular briefings, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes. Instead, they wait 5.5 hours. She wants to put the blame and police did that night on dignitaries when really they're to blame for maybe a 20-minute delay. It's absolutely outrageous. And this is what happens when you have no clue what you're doing. All right, let's get to our double dose of unbelievable. Bet you didn't think I'd be trying to let Bob Ferguson and Pramila Jayapal off the hook today on my show. Oh, I can't. I yell at them for everything, or then, you know, when I yell at them for something they really deserve, people won't listen. This story makes me so angry. I got some whispers of this going on a couple days ago. I kind of ignored it because a lot of it was like angry social media people. And I'm like, well, I don't want to elevate random people on the internet and their anger over this situation and give it like new breath. So I sort of ignored it. Well, now it's totally out of control. So the News Tribune did a story in their reality check section. And by the way, two reporters were assigned to this story. And it was so long, I haven't counted the words, but if I had to guess, it's like a 2,000-word article. I guess this is what they were spending their time on rather than coming to our press conference today about how new media sucks. The headline, Tacoma Brewery caught in controversy as owners' political donations surface. Okay, I don't even have to read the story to you. You already know they donated to something conservative. I mean, just by the headline, they were caught. Oh my gosh, they were caught exercising their constitutional rights to support political causes and candidates they agree with. So we're talking about E9 Brewing in Tacoma. This makes me so mad. I have half a mind to drive down there and buy up their entire stock today. So it says a $1,250 contribution to a conservative political action committee sponsoring several contentious Washington state ballot initiatives has caused a stir in the Tacoma restaurant community. At least three Tacoma restaurants announced last week that they would cut ties with E9 Brewing Company after learning that the brewery's owners, brothers John and Lucas Titko, gave money as individuals in June to Let's Go Washington, a PAC formed in 2022 by Redmond-based hedge fund founder Brian Haywood that has sponsored three initiatives around transgender athletes, the Parents' Bill of Rights, and the millionaire's tax for the 2026 election. The brothers said their June donation was solely in support of the campaign to repeal the millionaire's tax, but it didn't matter. Did not matter. So here you've got two guys. You got a contribution worth $1,200. To the PAC supporting the Let's Go Washington initiatives. But they specifically donated it because they oppose, as do most people, the new income tax. Oh, it didn't matter, though. Oh, it didn't matter. The discovery of their donation, readily available in Public Disclosure Commission data, landed via local political organizer Zev Cook, who is a former Tacoma City Council candidate and co-chair of the Tacoma chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. So I've seen this video. It's like a Zay-Zam-Zur kind of person, but their name is Zev Cook. It says, in a video posted to her Instagram account August 23rd, she pointed out that the brother's contribution, and said, here is a list of Tacoma businesses that are helping fund Let's Go Washington's anti-trans initiatives. She specifically named E9 and Asado, which are co-owned by the brothers, under the umbrella group of X Group Restaurants and Frisco Freeze, the historic burger shack, which John and his son, Nico, bought in 2023. So you've got this like Zay Zamzer, who takes to social media, is like a leader of the local chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America named Zev Cook. And I've seen the video. And just, oh my gosh, these transphobes. I found out all these restaurants that they run and they gave money to Brian Haywood and Let's Go Washington. So it said by the end of the week, three different restaurants, including Corbeau, Dusty's Hideaway, and a local Dickie's Barbecue Pit franchise, said on social media they would stop carrying E9 beers. Dusty's also shared that it would donate earnings from its remaining E9 inventory to a fundraiser for a transgender employee to receive top surgery. Oh my gosh, these people are nuts. So a $1,200 donation, which was really a donation to fight the income tax, they've turned into an anti-trans donation because some Zay Zer Zem got on Instagram and lost their mind. And now three restaurants are saying, we're not going to carry their beer anymore. And the one that still has some stock left over, they're going to sell it, but they're going to use the proceeds to help one of their employees get top surgery. Good God. Good God. And by the way, Corbeau, Dusty's Hideaway, and Dick's Barbecue Pit. Okay. Look, business is business. I'm not saying you have to do business with anyone you disagree with. I'm just laughing at you because I think you're absurd. So it says, in a phone call on Tuesday, Andres Bell, the executive chef at E9 Firehouse on 6th Avenue, told the News Tribune that the past week has been stressful for staff. He's worked for the company for about 4 years and has never felt any sense of discrimination, hate, or violence. He said, as far as what's been said on social media, that's not what we do. That's not our culture. That's not what we stand for or condone. We just want to make sure everyone is safe. So that's not our culture. It's never been our culture. Asked why they had declined to issue a public statement in the immediate aftermath of Cook's original video, the brothers said they felt best to engage with concerned customers and staff directly. So here's the Tacoma News Tribune demanding to know why these brothers didn't issue a public statement after the Zay Zamzer ranted on Instagram. What business, what competent business is going to immediately issue a public statement? We're sorry that somebody on the internet is mad. We made a political donation to repeal an income tax that's going to dramatically hurt our business. But this is the Tacoma, that's the media does. Are you going to apologize for this? The media, you can apologize for this? They're like, we thought it was better just if we have concerned customers to talk to them directly. And then here's the thing that really, really just cracks me up. And it's so indicative of what kind of people these are. So this Zev Cook, who made the Instagram video, Cook confirmed to the News Tribune that the brothers had reached out to her after her initial video to clarify the reason for their contributions. But she said she didn't feel it was productive to engage with them. So they reached, they're normal human beings, because this is what normal, rational adults do. They reached out and they said, hey, you know, we saw your video. This was a donation about the income tax. It wasn't a donation for the other two initiatives. It didn't sound like they even really knew what the other two initiatives were about in reading their interview with the News Tribune. They just knew that they don't want the income tax. Who does? So they donate $1,200 and all of a sudden they've got places saying, we won't carry your beer. We're going to sell your beer and use it to pay for top surgeries. And the person that started the whole kerfuffle off of false data says, well, I didn't think it was productive to engage with them. After they called her, like a, or him, I don't know what it is, called and said, well, you know, we want to explain. Absolutely insane. And the brothers say that the anger has been nonstop since Monday. Here's what I think we should do. I think we should, so if you're down in Tacoma, support this brewery. Support this brewery. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. Look, but people can do what they want. If you don't want to go to a brewery because they made a donation to Let's Go Washington, I don't care. That's everybody's political, that's everybody's prerogative. If somebody had some like sign outside their coffee shop saying trans women are real women, I wouldn't go there and buy coffee. But I think it's also important because that those loud, angry voices can get so much attention on the internet and here in the press. And so it's important that reasonable people push back and say, no, we're not going to let you cancel a business. We're not going to let you cancel a business and put them out of business because you're angry and lose your mind and don't care to have any of the real information. So I think, what were the all the restaurants that they owned? I want to just pull this back up right now because I want to let people know where they can go. Let's see. E9, Asado, and Frisco Freeze. So if you're in the Tacoma area and you maybe know where E9 Brewing is, go give them some support and just say, hey, it's horrible what's happening to you. We support you guys 100%. And if I'm down there, I'll do the same. It's just absolutely outrageous that these people can get so spun up and get... I'm not mad at the social media influencers. I'm not really mad at anyone except the press. Like, the Tacoma News Tribune treated that as, like, their mission to get these business owners to give a mea culpa. And that's just what's wrong with the media these days. I asked you guys about this in our daily subscriber show poll. I just want to fit it in quick. If you would go out of your way to support a business that supports your values, like out of your way. Nicole?
Yeah. Like, actually.
Yeah, like you would go down to E9 in Tacoma just like to send a message. I think I would too.
I would make plans with some of my friends in Tacoma and go say hi to them and go there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I also go out of my way not to go.
To Tacoma?
Yeah. No, to a business that definitely doesn't support my values.
Yes.
So like I feel the same way about it, but I'm not going to make a social media video saying don't go to these restaurants because they support trans kids. Mm-hmm. Like I just would never do that.
I know.
It's so bizarre to me.
I've been in a mental struggle lately because the perfume I wear is Marc Jacobs. And I heard of some bad things he said. And I was like, do I have to find a new perfume?
Well, yeah. And like Molly,
I think I might.
Molly Moon's ice cream.
Right.
Which was like the communists and their. Mm-hmm. I mean, why are all the ice cream companies commies?
I don't
That's
know.
So strange, isn't it? But Molly Moon's was
Except
the one
for our friend
who had. Yes.
Marc Mullet.
Sorry, Marc Mullet. But. Yeah, it's just Ben and Jerry's and Molly Moon had the little sign that said, cops aren't welcome here.
Right.
You know, and then they sued the city because it wasn't safe outside their shop. Mm-hmm. Weird. But I was down at the waterfront with Daryl and his wife and their mm-hmm. newborn baby and another friend of ours. And they wanted ice cream. They're like, let's go to Molly Moon's. And then Daryl immediately looks at me. He's like, Brandy, do you want to go somewhere else? And I'm like... Because he knew. I was like,
they're
not going to go to the comedy.
Our friends in Pike Place Market,
yes,
too.
Yes. Helnica.
Is that Helene.
I need to ask them how to pronounce it.
I know. We pronounce it.
But so they were set on it. And I'm like, I'm not going to ruin their plans with their baby. And so I was like, I'm just not going in the communist restaurant.
So wait, did they go and you just waited outside?
Look, I had a scoop, okay? But okay. I didn't enjoy a second of it. All right. I wasn't going to uproot my friend's plans
Fair.
Over my disdain for Molly Moon's ice cream.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Look, it was delicious. I'm not going to lie. All right. I'm sorry. We're doing a polling right now.
Yeah.
80% of you say yes, that you would definitely go out of your way. Andy said, I voted yes, but more broadly, I would prefer businesses stick to their business and leave their politics out of it. We'd be better off if we had no idea the business owner's politics.
So it's hard to say that because that's who we need, our business owners.
Yeah.
They're the ones with money. And we need them to support these causes. So I don't really care if they don't want to support our, you know, it's a free country, still so far. And so if they want to support a different one, that's fine. And then we can support the ones that we do agree with. So I don't think that's the solution because that we need those people.
Yeah. Matt Gilbert says, yes, during the shutdowns, I went to every restaurant that defied the orders and were on Dory's show. So if Dory's like had them on, they were defying the orders. Yeah. And I did the same thing during the pandemic. I would go to a couple restaurants that were like speaking out against some of the mandates.
I mean, it's important.
Yeah.
We have to have people on our team speaking out and support them or don't.
Yeah. Alice says, I voted yes, but appreciate when businesses don't broadcast their beliefs. It does not bother me either if a business shows support or flies a flag. If I get good service and am treated respectfully, that being said, I would tend to try to patronize a business that shares my values more so than one that does not. Yeah, and I agree. And I'm not going to if I said I'm never going to go into a business that had a trans pride flag hanging up, I'd never be able to go in any business. There's so many around here.
And but there is something different also about somebody that outs them. So this is just a random person that's saying, hey, don't do this and putting that information out there.
Yes.
If somebody wants to support the businesses that they that agree with them or whatever, they can do the work, go find out who's supporting and then support those businesses. But this kind of doxing is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And you're talking about all the people that work there. Mm-hmm. It hurts their livelihood. They're not the ones who made the political donation. So it's outrageous. But I avoid the trans flag places just because I know that there's a higher likelihood that my stuff will get spit in because of the position I've taken on girls sports.
Which makes Starbucks hard to...
The street, hang out the old trans pride flag up in there. Anyway, all right, we'll get to Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez of Washington State facing a potential punishment from her own party for falling out of line. First, a lot of investors focused on AI, crypto, tech, and also it's important to focus on what's happening with energy right now. Our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital can give you a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Just make sure that it's being properly managed against risk, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Make sure you tell them that you heard about them right here. Zach's my money manager. He'll take great care of you. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach on his Know Your Risk podcast. You can check him out on YouTube, X, etc. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. All right. So I understand there's some political maneuvering happening in Washington's 3rd congressional district. You have Republican John Braun facing up against Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, the Democrat. And that has been, you know, that's a swing district. At least it was a very short time ago. But so I think that Marie Glusenkamp-Perez is trying to position herself as definitely more of a moderate because of the type of district it is. So I understand that. I get it. And so I just want to preface this whole segment with that. So we talked on the show a couple weeks ago about some of these statements being made by Democratic state lawmakers who are basically admitting that they're not free to vote how they want to vote. Like, this is State Rep Natasha Hill, who says that she had to. Bob made them. They shoved it down my throat, a vote to fund police.
What we did on that $100 million that Bob Ferguson shoved down our throats in order to play nice with the opposition, which is why I say take such a big issue with playing nice with the opposition. I'm not trying to move toward fascism. If they want to hold shit down with fascism and salute Nazis, that's not, there's no center anymore. So I can be honest, not a vote I wanted to take, took it for the team.
Yeah, took it for the team. So it's okay. So you hate cops that much, but you still voted to fund cops because your party told you to. Then there was this one that was even more sort of blatant. State Senator Twyna Nobles, she had been complaining about some cuts to higher education on social media, saying that the cuts broke her heart, to which I called out to her, Senator, you voted for those cuts. And she said, yes, and I had to once the decision was made about the cuts. It's not because I wanted to. Even as chair, I was asked to vote with the caucus. This is common and unfortunate. So she says, she even talks about how later another says, only one of my colleagues who was leaving the legislature voted no. Later, another was allowed to because they were also leaving. So she speaks about it as you're being allowed. So you're not being elected by the citizens you serve to go make the best choices for them? You're making whatever choices the Democratic Party wants you to make? Similar dynamic playing out right now in Congress. So this is the headline from the New York Post. Hakeem Jeffries fumes at two House Dem defectors, vows a serious response. So one of those Dem defectors is Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. House Democratic leadership publicly scolded Reps Jared Golden and Marie Glusenkamp-Perez for breaking party lines to bail out Republicans on a key vote Tuesday. The two Democrats voted for a GOP rule, a procedural requirement needed to determine how bills will be considered after Republicans suffered enough defections to defeat the measure. It passed 210 to 208. So those two Democrats, like, helped it pass. Bipartisan votes for rules almost never happen in the House of Representatives. In response to that, Hakeem Jeffries said, it necessitates a serious response, and we have asked the Committee on Caucus Rules to take this up in short order. So they're basically like, how dare they do this? And so they're going to, what, scold them or I don't know. What are they going to do to them? I guess today they've sort of walked this back a little bit. Like, they had a conversation with Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, and maybe they're not going to have the Democratic Rules Committee do anything to her. But it says, as a result of their defection, Democrats were forced to take a difficult vote on a resolution denouncing socialism, something 192 of them opposed. First of all, why is that a difficult vote? They were forced to take a difficult vote on denouncing socialism.
Great. I guess it was because somewhere in there, there was a compliment to Trump. And they didn't want this little, like, written compliment.
No, they would have supported socialism. Both rogue Democrats indicated that their defection was motivated by the Northeast Lobsterman Protection Act, which was in the bundle of bills that the rule unlocked for consideration. Let's see. The lobster legislation delays the implementation of new fishing regulations aimed at protecting whales until 2035. So Marie Glusenkamp-Perez took to social media today, and this was obviously a shot at her fellow Democrats. She said, Sunday night, my son pulled his first fish out of the Columbia River. What the D.C. bubble doesn't get is that working waterfronts require working people. Nature is not a terrarium, and you don't get effective environmentalism without the input of people who make their livelihoods and heritage on the water. Whether we're talking about lobsters or sea lions, working people need a seat at the table and electeds need to listen to them, not data from the 1990s. So she says, look, this was about the lobster bill. I wanted it to be pulled for consideration so we could vote on it. And it just happened to also do a bunch of other things that really helped Republicans. And so her caucus, big mad at her, big mad. But they also have to know, like, she's in a swing district. We're months from the midterms. You know, you kind of got to let those members do what needs to be done to win elections, right? I mean, I don't like it, but that's the way it works. All right. Speaking of big mad, Attorney General Nick Brown, big mad that Donald Trump won't let him mutilate kids. All he wants to do is mutilate children, Donald. What's the problem with that? So as you know, President Trump came out with this order that says that Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program funds can't be paid for gender transition surgeries or puberty blockers or hormone treatments for minors under 18. That rule is set to take effect, gosh, about a month and a week from now, October 13th. So, of course, Washington, we got to sue over it. Washington joins coalition challenging federal attack on gender-affirming healthcare for youth. In a statement, Nick Brown said the federal administration is unlawfully attempting to block states from using federal Medicaid funds for gender-affirming care for low-income minors and some young adults. Like, yeah, that's what he wants to do, mm-hmm. is block federal funds from being used to mutilate children. Thanks for making the point again. The coalition argues that since the creation of the Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program in the 1960s, Congress has always granted states the authority to determine which services would be covered under their Medicaid and CHIP programs, subject only to limits set in statute. Yeah, that's fine, but back in the 1960s when it was formed, we didn't find it acceptable to mutilate children and cut off their genitals and breasts in the name of not some sort of medical condition, but radical gender ideology. So are you saying that nothing in the United States should have changed since the 1960s? Nick Brown, that doesn't make a lot of sense. That's a pretty poor argument because things change all the time. And yeah, this is one of the things that President Donald Trump wants to change, and most common sense Americans agree with him. All right, we'll get to Florida Report coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, you really should be a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They are fighting for private property rights in court and down in Olympia, and they're helping landlords every single day on an individual basis navigate this really difficult political climate that they're in of changing rules and regulations. So you can go to rhawa.org to peruse what they're all about, sign up to become a member. It's like $260 a year, and they have educational events and events talking about policy all throughout the year. They're a lot of fun. I usually try to make it to a couple of them. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, it's Thursday. That's when we check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
So it finally happened. DeSantis has given Byron Donalds his endorsement.
Yeah, it was more of a endorsement across the board okay. of all the Republicans on stage at this leadership summit or leadership forum. But yeah, DeSantis has endorsed officially all these Republicans that are going to be on the ballot.
Yes. So this was at their GOP leadership forum. DeSantis was the moderator for conversations with some of the candidates, and he warned about the danger of voter apathy, of Republicans not coming out this cycle.
I'm endorsing the slate here tonight, even Blaze and Golia, because I know it's important for the state of Florida. And we have 60 however many more days to go out there and do it. I think apathy is our enemy. And if we're not apathetic and we understand we got a job to do, you know, I think things will work out well.
Yeah. And you can't be apathetic when, you know, even if you have a majority and Florida has been trending more red, the second you're apathetic is the second you're going to start to lose races.
Yeah, and when you listen to a lot more of his remarks during this whole forum was really great to listen to. You got to know a lot about each of these candidates. But DeSantis talked about how you can't get comfortable, even though we have a million plus more registered Republicans. That doesn't mean those people are all going to show up to vote. So you can't be like, you know, sitting on your hands and hoping everybody else does that work. Everybody's got to show up and cast their votes.
Yeah, and I just have to play this. DeSantis, just no tolerance for hecklers.
We have 3 or 4 million more residents than New York State does. And New York State, hey, Soros isn't paying you enough because you're not very good at this. You should try again. He needs to pay some better talent instead of having people like you show up. This ain't my first rodeo, lady. I've seen it all, and you ain't very good at it.
Yeah, it's always a screeching woman. Why is it always a screeching woman?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen guys act up at these things too, but not to the extent that women do. They really just be going there specifically to shout.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So we talked about this earlier in the show, the vote to condemn socialism in Congress. And apparently it's very hard for Democrats to condemn socialism, but not Florida Democrats, because they live amongst a lot of people and have a lot of constituents who fled socialism and communism.
Yeah. So out of the 8 Democrats that voted with the Republicans on this, 2 of them are from Florida. These 2 particular Democrats are in districts that were redistricted this year. And one lost their district entirely and is now sitting in a entirely red district that Trump won by like 10 points. And then the other one is now redistricted into a district that Trump won by 18 points. So I don't think they really have a choice but to like appeal to some more moderate people and vote common sense on this topic. I think in Florida, they're a little more safe to do that. Maybe not on a national stage, but at the state level, I think Democrats are in a safe space to be reasonable and make reasonable decisions out loud.
Yeah, that makes sense now when you explain that they got redistricted into red districts. Like, yeah, they probably shouldn't sit out of the socialism communism vote. You know, and I get it. These sorts of votes are performative. They don't do anything, but it puts people on the record on where you stand. And it actually should be pretty easy to say, yeah, I'm not in support of socialism, except there's so many socialist candidates who are going to be caucusing with Democrats. And so it would be almost be just making a statement about their own party. So all right. There's a new Florida Education Commissioner, Henry Mack, and he had a very important directive for Florida schools.
Yes, he did. He put out a notice and sent a direction to all the school districts, basically saying that following Trump's announcement to rename Lake Ontario Lake America, Florida is ready to lead the way. He's directed the Division of Public Schools to update academic standards and instructional material to reflect this change immediately. God bless Florida. God bless America.
I'm sorry. It's really so dumb. It's really so dumb. It's like, I get it. I mean, we're changing the names of things. I do like Gulf of America. It's fine. But I don't think that it needs to be, oh my gosh, a directive to update it immediately.
I think about it in the mind of a kid where I'm a kid, I'm in school, and things are exciting and things are not so like jaded. And if teachers are like, we've renamed this lake to Lake America, and I think it like kind of maybe instills a little bit of like Americanism into the kids, because like you're changing these names. They don't understand the politics behind why they're named what they're named. But if I look at it from that light, it's probably a way to get kids a little bit engaged in something.
Yeah, no, totally. That's fine, I guess. Maybe just not the top priority of, you know, the brand new Florida Education Commissioner. But Lake America, whatever you want to call it. I do think it's funny, like we played the Bill Maher clip on the show the other day where he's like, oh yeah, Democrats are all mad that they're changing the name of this lake. Meanwhile, the chicken ex pregnant man, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, they change the names of things all the time. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, let's get to comments from the live stream. Robert Lawson, Capital Correspondents Association sounds suspiciously like George Orwell's Ministry of Truth. Yeah, yeah. They really want to control information, don't they?
Carrie Harris for $50. Wow. Keep up the great work.
We're trying. We're trying. Julie Kennedy, this is really sad and scary times. Since when does the media snuggle up with the government? I guess it's pretty common, apparently.
Yeah, maybe it's been going on longer than we even know. Maybe it's just coming out now.
Well, right. They've been doing this for 50 years, but I think new media has made their job a little bit more difficult, and they're not willing to get with the times. They want to gatekeep.
Right.
And then Milkman, I think he's talking about Jerry Kornfield's assertion that Jonathan Cho is rich because Discovery Institute pays him $163,000 a year, which is a great salary. Don't get me wrong. But as Milkman points out, that's just barely more than a Seattle school teacher. Right? And they're on strike.
It's a great point.
Yes. Yeah. But wild.
On Mayor Wilson continues to lie about the Bite of Seattle shooting or to just like place blame on everyone else but her. Clam Bake says Seattle is doomed with that mayor. She is unqualified. If we think that things are bad now, she only took power from the people 8 months ago.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. So 4 years is going to be rough. On the brewery being shamed for their political donation, Jodak says, I'm at work right now, 8 minutes from E9. I'm going to make it my priority to go after work. Yeah, I love that. That's great. Good stuff.
That's great.
Leave a good tip.
Shannon says, and say hi from us.
And say hi.
Shannon says, Tacoma is really becoming full of hate regarding where you stand politically. It's hard up here. Seattle gets so much attention. The stepchild Tacoma is running wild.
That's why I've always said Seattle politics matter. Seattle politics matter because it just infiltrates everything else. On Glusenkamp Perez facing potential punishment for her vote against her party, Tanya says, certainly not fascist at all for Hakeem to threaten action against someone for their independent choice on how to vote.
And not even hiding it.
No,
I mean, they have... It's been like 24 hours of brutal, like, she deserves to be punished. They deserve to be punished. What? Like, is it not part of their job? They get to choose what they want to vote, how they want to vote. It's wild.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's not more concerning to other people.
Absolutely insane.
Crazy.
In a super chat, Eric says, anyone else see how hard Steve Ballmer and the Clippers owner got slapped? Versus Storm co-owner who verbally assaulted two teenage girls. So yeah, apparently, but his was a totally different situation.
It was
situation.
A salary cap.
Salary
issue.
Cap. He circumvented the team's salary cap. So they fined him $30 million and suspended him for a year.
And they lose five, I believe, first round draft picks.
Yes.
That's huge.
Strip the franchise. I mean, yeah, but that's a totally, I'm not saying that it wasn't as bad to make teenage girls cry, but obviously that salary cap is in place to protect the sanctity of the game. And so kind of a different, that's like a franchise failure versus an individual human failure, moral failure.
Like although I can't believe you thought he was going to get away with that.
Yeah, but well, that is the thing. Like, how did you, or you just wanted to take the consequence? Is the player that good? I don't know anything about it. So, all right, Nicole, thank you. We'll get to our closing sanity check. First, so many Undivided viewers and listeners have taken the First Mark challenge with fantastic results. Tara says that she switched her homeowners to First Mark, saved $1,600 a year, and she says she has better coverage. Guys, why would you not take the First Mark challenge? Literally today, after you go to E9 Brewing, call First Mark Insurance. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. If they can't get you better insurance at a better price, then they're just going to tell you, hey, you know, we can't get you better than you have now. I'd keep the insurance you've already got. But 11,000 Washington families have taken the First Mark Challenge and had a victory. We call it First Mark Challenge Victory, where they realized that they were paying too much for their insurance, so they could get better insurance at a better price. So don't give your insurance company a free raise. Before you renew, let First Mark review. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com. What are you waiting for? Your savings could start tomorrow. firstmarkinsurance.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani has unveiled a one-year moratorium on using AI in public school classrooms up to the eighth grade.
AI has gone from the pages of a sci-fi novel into something present in nearly every aspect of our lives. Today, I am proud to announce New York City's first ever comprehensive AI policy for our public schools, City Hall's answer to those questions. It is the most comprehensive of its kind anywhere in the country, and it begins with a simple principle. Children need their teachers and human connection in order to learn and in order to grow. So beginning this school year, we will implement a one-year moratorium on generative AI for students in 2K through 8th grade.
You guys, I don't disagree with that. I mean, and he was talking to a kid who said he used AI for like every paper he wrote. AI is amongst a slurry of other things. It's just robbing children of their brain capacity. And now, don't get me wrong, AI has some very useful uses. And we want kids to learn how to use AI, to harness AI. And I think that's why it's appropriate. Stop at the eighth grade, and then you move into your older years, and you can find out there's some very useful uses for AI. So I actually agree with this. I think I'll be interested to see if grades actually improve, for instance, or not. All right. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We will see subscribers for a rousing edition of Sundays with Subscribers this week. I saw this, our guest, Sarah, speaking at an event on Tuesday. I was like, she might be the smartest woman I've ever heard speak. She's going to talk to us about the fight against the income tax. So we'll have that on Sunday. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. Okay. All right. Have a great weekend. I'll be being deposed by the government tomorrow. Say a little prayer for me in the morning, okay? But I have nothing to hide. Nothing.